Trading in futures products entails significant risk of loss, which must be understood prior to trading and may not be appropriate for all investors.
Good morning, everybody. It's Friday, April 12th, 5:28 a.m. Central Time. Grain markets are mixed to higher this morning. Brian Splitt is joining us. Guys, let's start off with this USDA report that was out yesterday.
So USDA reduced its estimate of U.S. soybean exports yesterday. The reduction resulted in a larger U.S. carryout estimate for the current marketing year. The agency increased its demand for U.S. corn in both the feed and ethanol categories. The projection for U.S. wheat demand was reduced in the feed and residual categories. USDA left its estimate of Brazilian corn and soybean production unchanged compared to the prior month. USDA's estimate of Argentina's corn crop was reduced slightly, while the Argentina soybean production number was left unchanged.
All right, Brian, let's split this up. Let's do the United States first, and then we'll do the world stuff and CONAB and that whole mess. So we did see the reduction in the corn ending stocks projection. It wasn't quite as big as what the trade had wanted, but you did see the demand bump, and I think that's largely based on the March 1 stocks number. The soybean thing was a little bit of a surprise, I guess, based on the pre-report trade estimates. I thought they were going to go down with exports, which they did, and it was warranted based on the pace of sales and shipments. Wheat, they went down with demand a little bit in feed and residual. Any thoughts on the U.S. Stuff specifically in a vacuum?
I think the only problem I have with the U.S. numbers is the average estimate for beans. That was just too low. It didn't make any sense personally, but
yeah. Okay. So let's look at the, I updated these charts this morning. These are your ending stocks to use ratio charts. And if there's one way to gauge versus history what sort of supply and demand situation we're in, this is it. So if you guys are watching on YouTube, this yellow bar is the one that really matters. This is the current marketing year. This blue bar is just a guess for next year. But this 14.5% stocks to use ratio for U.S. corn is drastically higher than last year. It was 9.9 last year. This is much more similar to like a 2015 through 2019 time frame. So that's, I mean, it's bearish, and that's not going to change a whole lot.
No, I mean, this just kind of validates the thought process that we have as far as, you know, things don't need to track 100% with 10 years ago, but there's an awful lot of similarities to the transition from bull market that started 2010, bull market that started 2020, bull market peaks in 2012, bull market peaks in 2022. Transition year was 2013, transition year was 2023, 2014 with these type of stocks to use numbers, and maybe they're not going to be that high, you know, depending on how the acreage does end up in June. But we're going to be somewhere, you know, 15, 16, maybe 17%, and that suggests that we should be low to mid threes in the futures.
And that's assuming we have a normalish crop in the United States. And the yield number, of course, is the biggest swing item on the balance sheet. It can move things really quickly. I have two things to say about this. The first one is that I know a lot of people, especially once we get to the world stuff, a lot of people are going to accuse USDA of forcing prices lower and manipulating the markets. But you look at the stuff that they printed, the stuff that they actually printed for the last 3 years prior to this year, they do print bullish reports and bullish data sometimes. It's just, it's not happening right now. The second one, the second thing that I would say about this is that even during these bear market years, like your 2015 through 2019 or 20, you had rallies in there. It's mm-hmm. just like those weren't big bull market years. I did the same thing for beans. This doesn't look as like egregiously bad as corn does, but 8.2% for the United States is the projection for the current marketing year, which is the highest since the 1920 marketing year. And then wheat, I don't know. I don't know if anybody cares about wheat stocks to use ratio. The market, wheat market never makes any sense to me. But I think USDA, I think what they did yesterday is just confirm that we've got a bearish situation pretty much across the board.
Yeah, I mean, really at this point, and the April report generally isn't a game-changing, major market-moving type of an event. The May report will get the first official balance sheet from the USDA, so they'll take the acreage numbers from the quarterly stock and prospective plannings report. They'll apply likely the trend line yield that they used on the Outlook form, and then the big unknown is how they assess the demand for the next marketing year. But that is likely to be a bearish data set. So, you know, the question moving forward right now is what do we get at some point? Because that, you know, it's done it every year since I've been doing this, and maybe this is the first year it doesn't, but you know, there should be some kind of opportunity in that May, June, July timeframe to get marketing done on some kind of a seasonal move higher, a counter trend rally. Trend is down, right? We've established that the trend has been down for the last 2 years, but there should be a counter trend rally sometime in this period of the year. And like you'd mentioned, even in those other years, 2014, 15, 16, 17, 18, you know, all the way, you got a seasonal move to do some marketing. You just got to take advantage of it, and it's likely to be short-lived with this type of balance sheet activity.
Yeah, when it comes to grain marketing, the sort of questions that I've had come in are like, Joe, should I be throwing in the towel on new crop and just selling it? And I don't have an answer. I don't know where the market's going, but my response has been largely, well, you know, you've got what have historically been like your best 3 months of the year coming up. Like if you've got a chance for a row crop rally, it's usually May, June, July are your best 3 months. Let's jump to CONAB.
CONAB reduced its forecast for the Brazilian corn and soybean crops yesterday. The crop agency is predicting this season's soybean crop to reach 146.5 million metric tons, down 5.2% compared to last year. The production cut is due to unfavorable growing conditions in Mato Grosso. Brazil's corn crop is expected to reach 110.9 million metric tons, down about 16% from last season. The reduction is attributed to fewer corn acres and the expectation of lower yields. CONAB is forecasting corn acres to drop by 8.5% and yields to be reduced by 8.1%.
Massive, massive differences between CONAB and USDA in both corn and soybeans. In corn, you've got a difference between the two estimates for Brazil of 13 million metric tons, which is 512 million bushels of corn. That's a substantial amount. In soybeans, the difference between the two entities is 8.5 million metric tons. That's 312 million bushels of soybeans, which is a huge amount. What are your thoughts, Brian, on the CONAB versus USDA debacle?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of been a trend over the last, 3 to 5 years, where if you were to backtrack to, let's say, 2018, 2019, CONAB and USDA were pretty much lockstep. And then it seems like over the last 3 years especially, we've seen USDA really above CONAB. And the disparity this year between USDA and CONAB is the largest disparity that we've seen percentage-wise ever. I don't know what's driving that. And the fact is they don't have to match up at the end of the marketing year either. So when you look back over the last several years, USDA didn't go down to where CONAB was at the end of the marketing year. And so you can discuss this all we want. I believe the trade at large will continue to use the USDA data set.
It certainly appears to me as if the trade is trading the USDA numbers and not the CONAB numbers. And we're going to get the question, like, who is right historically about, you know, the Brazilian crops? And the answer is nobody really knows. I mean, these are just numbers on a sheet of paper. And what is the actual number? I don't know that anybody knows, but I'll tell you this. The market doesn't care about the CONAB numbers. They certainly don't appear to. Here's the USDA numbers. And again, the CONAB numbers were lower. There's also some issues with Argentina, like that Argentina corn number. Some of the exchanges have come down drastically closer to like a 50 because they've got disease pressure. I don't know if USDA is too high there potentially. Maybe that's something they're going to have to address in future reports. So there's a lot of disparities here, but it hasn't really resulted in any sort of positive price action, I don't think.
Yeah, and maybe just to make a point about that real quick. So Argentina was the area of discussion last year with their drought, and that was because of soybeans, right? And so the Buenos Aires Grain Exchange and the Rosario Grain Exchanges, they came down sharply. And then USDA took a while, and they eventually went in the same direction, but it was a delayed response. Some of these estimates for Argentine corn for the Rosario and Buenos Aires grain exchanges have come down sharply very quickly to 49.5 and 50.5 million tons. So maybe the USDA over the next month or two may start going in that direction because, again, they typically have a delayed response and it's not going to be as big of a slash to the expected production. But I wouldn't be surprised if maybe come May we're seeing the USDA, especially because this is a pretty unprecedented event that we're seeing in Argentina with this disease. You know, can they come down to 52 to 53? I do think that's that's reasonable over the next month or two.
I'll tell you when it'll start to matter. It'll start to matter when and if U.S. export business improves as a result of these supposed lower South American production numbers, which we don't know if it's reality or not, but if results in additional export business and we can quantify the export business, then that's when it starts to really matter. All right, let's get to the drought situation.
So USDA released their weekly drought monitor data yesterday. Precipitation fell across portions of the Corn Belt last week. As a result, drought conditions improved in eastern Wisconsin, southwestern Indiana, southern Illinois, southwest Missouri, and central Minnesota. A lack of precipitation caused drought conditions to spread in western Kentucky. Drought conditions across the High Plains were mostly unchanged on the week, with the exception of drought expanding in northern South Dakota and up into southeastern North Dakota. When we look at the percentage of U.S. areas experiencing drought, corn country 23%, soybeans 22%, winter wheat 18%, spring wheat 26%, and cattle country 13%.
When USDA says that only 23% of U.S. corn production is within a drought, I don't know if this is weighted by production or if it's just weighted by geography. I don't know. But that's a big chunk of Iowa and parts of Nebraska and parts of those areas that are drought stricken. So I don't know, but that's still a big problem area.
Yeah, Iowa is extremely important to overall production. So you got kind of a tale of two different stories there, right? Because I just think back to like a year ago, you know, we were talking 50%, 50 plus percent. So that number's been cut by half, but where the drought remains is in a very critical growing region.
We do have some weather forthcoming early next week. They're talking some strong storm systems, maybe some snow in the northern plains, western Corn Belt. You go out through the 10-day, and there's some precipitation in a lot of areas of the Corn Belt. There will absolutely be some ongoing planting progress, but I think there will be some areas that will be held up for a little bit. The other thing I'll mention as it relates to U.S. weather is that there is not really any rain in the forecast for U.S. HRW wheat country in the southern plains. You look at Kansas, you look at Oklahoma, you look at Texas, you look at eastern Colorado, Nebraska. There's really not a ton of rainfall in the forecast at all for the next 10 days. I thought the other day when Kansas City wheat rallied, I thought maybe that was part of it, and the rallies since kind of died down. But that's going to be something that maybe we pay a little bit more attention to moving forward.
China has canceled Ukrainian corn purchases. Although the exact volume is unknown, some traders said the cancellations amounted to roughly 300,000 metric tons. One trader said China made the cancellations to support its own farmers while grain prices are low. According to another source, the cancellations were made due to Chinese demand declining while domestic grain supplies are high. China canceled 1 million metric tons of Australian wheat and 500,000 metric tons of U.S. wheat in March. Those cancellations were attributed to Chinese grain prices falling and economic struggles.
China's just canceling stuff all over the place. And then across the Reuters wire early this morning, China March soybean imports shrink to lowest in 4 years, which was expected. But these Chinese demand issues are probably not a positive.
Yeah, I mean, the month of March, we had a lot of wheat cancellations. Mm-hmm. And so now, you know, and this type of story for corn, we knew this, not necessarily actual volumes, but we knew last week that the Chinese government was telling their importers to kind of back off on imports. The story at that point was reported similar to what you had mentioned, where they wanted to support domestic values ahead of their planting season. So whether this also has an underlying demand issue to it as well, I don't know. The wheat cancellations would suggest that that is also a possibility. But when we had the report of the government advising importers to reduce imports, it was because of they wanted to raise domestic values ahead of planting to entice the acres.
I have some demand charts here to illustrate why China is such a big deal. China is projected to be the top importer of corn on the planet this year at 23 million metric tons. Soybeans, it's this chart is crazy that China is that much bigger than everybody else when it comes to soybean imports. And wheat, China projected to be the fourth largest, but they're only a couple million metric tons behind the European Union, which is the top. So if they decided to increase wheat imports, they could be the largest wheat importer too. So China is such a big deal when it comes to the global demand base. When they start to soften up a little bit, it's just not a good look for price action.
U.S. corn export sales declined significantly last week. Net corn sales of 13 million bushels fell to a marketing year low and below pre-report estimates. The print was down 66% from the previous week and down 72% from the prior four-week average. Japan was the largest corn buyer for the week. Net soybean sales improved to 11 million bushels, up 57% from the previous week, but down 3% from the prior four-week average. Mexico was the largest buyer for the week. Wheat sales of 3 million bushels were up noticeably from the previous week, but down 2% from the prior four-week average. The Philippines were the largest wheat buyer for the week.
This was just bad across the board. Unknown destinations canceled some corn purchases, which is not positive. There's nothing good here at all.
Yeah, I mean, this week's corn totaled a third of last week. Not good. You know, and the market was concerned last week because that number was below a million tons. We were running, week after week after week over a million tons. Yeah. And then we kind of cracked that million ton barrier. And this week was just horrible. So this is not good. We do not want to see this become a trend.
We hope that's an outlier and that we bounce back next week. What did cattle do yesterday?
They were slightly higher. Live cattle futures were an average of 56 cents higher. Feeders were an average of 95 cents higher. Box beef was mostly unchanged yesterday. Choice ended the day 14 cents higher to close at 298.37, and select was 87 cents lower to end the day at 295.15.
What's the latest in the bird flu situation?
So South Dakota yesterday became the eighth state to confirm bird flu in a dairy herd. And I did misspeak yesterday. There's no states that are banning any movement of cattle due to this bird flu. They're just restricting movement. There are those 17 states. And when I say restricting movement, I just mean like additional health papers. Where that will go in the future, I don't know. But we're just going to continue to see this spread, in my opinion.
Brian, we did cattle charts earlier this week in one of our premium videos, and I think you were kind of pessimistic, generally speaking. Is that still kind of your bias without getting into a full-blown technical discussion?
Yeah, I would say trend is down. The month of March was a monthly reversal lower in the live cattle, and we identified some levels that we do need to get above in order to maybe turn the trend to sideways to potentially higher. But the concern is how closely we resemble what we did 9 years ago, which was a rather catastrophic break from what at that time was record highs to much lower values.
Outside markets on Friday, U.S. dollar is actually up quite a bit. Stocks are mixed. Bonds up just a little bit. Gold is up $42 into fresh all-time highs. Crude oil is up $1.12 at $86.14. Have a great weekend, guys. We'll talk to you on Monday.